If the project you started isn't measuring up to your expectations, give the Cajun Carpenters a call now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
Welcome back, y'all, to Rosie on the House, where we have special guests in studio from the city of Phoenix, Mr. Michael Grubbs, residential inspection supervisor, as well as Josh State, plan review supervisor. So if you've got any question about trying to get work permitted or inspected, here's your opportunity to talk. And boy, as soon as I mentioned who we had in studio, the lines have lit up. They've stayed lit up. Jennifer cleared one or two in the break. There is an open line at 1-888-767-4348. You don't need to be from the city of Phoenix to call and talk to these guys. Many of the municipalities and building code enforcement areas, agencies, operate pretty close to the same. So, and like I told you at the beginning of the show, Michael Reisch, our broadcast engineer, turned off the call tracing mechanism. So if you want to call and talk about something maybe at your own house that you know isn't up to code, we have no way of back tracing the call and showing up at your house and giving you a citation. You guys wouldn't do that anyway, right?
No.
When do you go out to a house that is obviously in a code violation? What does it take to trigger that?
We are complaint-driven. We don't have enough staff to actually go out and research and look for violators ourselves.
Yeah, we don't have building inspectors that are out there combing the area looking for people doing things they shouldn't be doing. We simply don't have the time.
All right.
We have been talking about putting a fleet of drones to work.
Yeah, wonderful. So Patty in Chandler was on the phone with us before that bottom of the hour news break, and she's trying to set up a living arrangement for her 90-plus-year-old dad that somewhere on her property, but maybe a little bit more privacy and a little bit more autonomy than actually moving them right into that guest bedroom in the hall. What are a homeowner's options in that situation? She specifically asked about the granny pod, which are one of those things I just slap my head and say, why didn't I think of that? Pre-manufactured, small, mini housing units that only need to be connected to the sewer, the water, and the electricity, and boom, you've got instant living quarters. Why can't I just put an RV? Why can't I just put an RV on the side of the house or bring in a nice big fifth wheel with some pop-out sliders on it?
Well, for me, or my opinion, is it depends on the city you're in and the zoning designation of your property and the city's zoning rules surrounding that. Most cities don't allow you to hook up an RV and allow somebody to stay in the RV. However, different zones allow for granny units or second accessory dwellings. The mini grand, what'd you call it?
Granny pods.
Granny pods. Sound to me like they could be classed as an RV. And it comes
some,
down to...
Some are portable. Some can be.
So if it's a permanent structure, then we would certainly get involved. If it's on wheels, I would think that it would fall into the RV category, and we do not enforce construction or connection. However, we would enforce the use of it if it is put to use on your property.
Okay. All right. I'm going to interject a public service announcement here real quick because we were talking with Romy all morning long out at Boyce Thompson Arboretum, and he is now making his way back into town, and he has called in to say, folks, it's too late for you to get up to Boyce Thompson Arboretum and watch the tree climbing contest because of the backup of traffic trying to get into the Renaissance Festival. So if you're thinking you're going to head up to the Shade Council's tree climbing contest at Boyce Thompson Arboretum, it's too late. Don't do it now. All right, Mike, let's bring in Kimberly calling from Peoria. Let's see if we can help Kimberly out with her question. Right after Kimberly, we're going to take Phyllis calling from Cave Creek. Good morning, Kimberly.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help you?
My husband and I bought a house 2 years ago, and the garage is set up where there's a double car garage and then a separate single car garage. Two owners ago, they enclosed the single car garage and converted it into a fourth bedroom. I don't know if they properly permitted that. I don't actually know if it was included in the square footage when we bought the house. So our question is, because the outside of the house looks like you could open it up and use it as a garage, but it's not a usable door anymore. They've completely sealed it. There's drywall and walls on the inside.
Okay. All right.
For a regular room. So should my husband and I go to the city of Peoria and get a permit so that this is considered an actual living space and a usable bedroom so that it's included in the square footage?
Okay. All right. Well, one of the things you could do is take a look at the appraisal that was done on the house and see if they included it in the square footage of the livable. I would be very, very surprised if they did. Which one of you guys would like to take this? She's in the house. The work was previously done. How about if she bought the house because she liked that fourth bedroom? What are the chances Peoria is going to say, gut it, turn it back into a garage?
You know, and I know that in the city of Phoenix, we would have ways to be able to do what we call an as-built permit.
Okay.
And a residential permit by inspection program so that we can get these things that were done without a permit. And Kimberly, this was clearly done without a permit. But in Phoenix, we have programs to get this, you know, legitimized and permitted after the fact and get it inspected after the fact and create that fourth bedroom. I would be very surprised if Peoria didn't have a similar type of program.
And what do y'all do in this situation when you go out to someone like Kimberly in Phoenix calls and says, hey, I've got this situation, the as-built? What's that process?
Well, the permitting process is you come in with a simple floor plan and what's called a plot plan that shows the areas that have either been built without a permit or enclosed to habitable space without a permit. And as long as zoning's okay with, you know, the lot coverage and the setbacks and stuff, and the floor plan doesn't show any obvious code violations, we issue a permit. It's what we call a permit by inspection.
Okay.
It's for as-built construction. It goes out into the field, and once out there, Mike's team takes over on the inspection side.
There are several ways to actually handle it. One of them could be an owner can request a job meeting with an inspector. They would pay a small fee, $150, I believe. Maybe
okay.
That's not so small. But,
okay.
And we would come out and look at the project and assess it and assess the feasibility. In this case, Kimberly, if you really want that bedroom, you might have to make some additional changes. And then once you've gotten your as-built permit, you may have be asked to open up the walls, the sheetrock a little bit so we can see electrical, see framing, see how things have been closed up. And you're probably going to have to deal with that garage door if it's still existing. But
yeah.
It is, anything's possible.
Okay. Well, there you go, Kimberly. I hope that helps, and I hope it helps a lot. You know, one of the other things we talk about a lot is not garage conversion to a bedroom, but carport conversion to a garage. That, like we were talking about in closing the back patio, that carport to garage conversion has to be one of y'all's most popular homeowner-driven projects, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not as easy as homeowners think. There's things that have to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, a carport is very different from a garage.
Tell us how.
Well, one of the things that is typical on that is in a lot of homes, you've got windows that open up from a carport into an area that can be used as a sleeping room. Now, in the past and in the code, that's okay from a carport, but it is not okay from a garage standpoint. A carport doesn't have to have any GFI outlets in it, doesn't even really have to have any electrical in it other than a light bulb. A garage is very different. The requirements in a garage are much further advanced than they are for a carport.
You've got the GFI receptacles to add.
Mm-hmm.
The fire rating between the inside of the garage and the attic ceiling needs to be addressed.
Addressed.
How about the door into the kitchen that has a Bel Air window in it?
Yeah, see, that door into the house from the garage has to be a 20-minute solid core door of one form or another. It can't have any windows in it unless that window is also fire rated. It has to be self-closing and self-latching, and it has to be sealed and weather tight.
And how many of those homes in South Scottsdale, the old good Suggs-built homes and masonry homes down there around Thomas and Indian School and McDowell, and you walk in and you turn the corner and you're in the kitchen and it has a nice little, nice big window out to the carport.
Yeah.
You're dead. That has to go when you convert it to a garage. And the reason for that is we're trying to isolate that 1 hour separation between the house, the living quarters, and a garage, and we don't need that separation in a carport environment.
Correct. We don't need it in a carport.
So people underestimate that all the time about how much work is really required to make that conversion. Now, let's talk about other Kimberly kind of brought it to the surface. But how about some of these other the homes we were just talking about? Thomas, Indian School, Camelback, McDowell, from Pima all the way over to 56.
Over there.
I mean, if I could own 100 of those homes, I would own them. They're masonry, they're rock solid, they're good bones, great neighborhoods, close to everything. I wish I could own 100 of them. But you buy one. And it's got work you know was completed that you suspect may not have been permitted. Where do we go back to this as-built situation? How can we come clean?
Well,
as the homeowner,
the first thing to realize is that if you are not responsible for the non-permitted construction, at least in the city of Phoenix, we are not going to hold you responsible and charge you fines and beat on you with a stick because you have this situation. We're going to work with you to try to get it permitted, get it inspected, get it up to code, and be done with it and know that you're living in a safe environment.
As a consumer advocate, I would like to see the home inspectors take the proactive step of notifying the homeowner, we highly suspect this work was done without inspection. And a lot of inspectors will not do that because the realtors won't let them do it because it may queer the deal. And I think it ought to be a standard that should be instituted immediately.
Exactly. And what you're finding right now, Rosie, is you're finding that a lot of appraisers are the ones who are driving this.
Yes.
And it's tragic for people who have purchased the house 5 years ago, didn't even know that this bedroom, bathroom addition wasn't done with a permit. They paid for it when they bought the house. Now they're trying to refinance. They're trying to sell the house. The appraiser comes in and says, this is an obvious addition. Show me a permit or it's not going to appraise this time. And now what do they do? And it can be very, you know, heartbreaking for these people, but there are ways to get it done.
Very good. We're here with Michael Grubbs, Residential Inspection Supervisor for City of Phoenix, as well as Josh States, Plan Review Supervisor for City of Phoenix. We've got Tom and Phyllis and Kimberly on hold. We'll get your calls right after this short break. Or no, Michael, let's bring one of these calls in right now. I'm not sure I understand Phyllis's question. We may only have time to clarify her question, but let's bring her in. Phyllis, sure. Calling from Cave Creek.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a call from, I'm in a condominium.
Okay.
I'm in the city of Phoenix, but mail address of Cave Creek.
Okay.
There is a fence around our property, completely surrounding our property, and we are gated community. The two gates in the front have access by pedestrian gates. The one in the back is car only. We have a lot of 88, 85, 80-year-olds back here who would not be able to walk the 2.5 blocks to get to the front gate, but they could get out by car. I'm just concerned that if there's some kind of emergency, we'd all be locked in on this side.
Interesting.
And I wanted to know who I need to talk to.
Interesting situation. We'll get to answer this question, but it's going to be right after this short break. You hang on. And Tom in Glendale wants to know more about the garage requirements for electrical permits. When we get back at Rosie on the House.